Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Welcome to Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
Some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
I am so glad you are with us today. I especially want to tell you some really wonderful news. We are celebrating on Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams, which you'll find on the Biz TV network, on Roku, and on 40 million households around America. We are celebrating the completion of our first year, which we are calling Season 1. And we are now into Season 2. And I hope if you haven't seen any of the shows, you'll go to bizbiztv.com, click on Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams, and you can have a look there. We have such an exciting show for you today, and we're going to start out talking with a good friend in travel in Dublin, Ireland, right after this.
This weather report is brought to you by the Curaçao Tourism Board. The long-range weather forecast for the north coast-to-coast calls for snow, sleet, icy rain, slippery roads, and a wind chill factor well below freezing. The long-range forecast for Curaçao calls for warm and sunny today, warm and sunny tomorrow, next month, and the months that follow, with highs around 86 degrees and lows around 76. Isn't it time to plan your breakaway in Curaçao now? Learn more at Curaçao.com. That's Curaçao.com.
I am delighted to have on the line with us Paul O'Connella. He is a travel editor with the Irish Independent. It's not a local, regional kind of newspaper. It's a national newspaper of Ireland, anywhere you are in the Republic of Ireland and pretty much anywhere you are in Northern Ireland. You'll find access to the Irish Independent. It's a prestigious newspaper whose reporting is reliable reporting. And when I am traveling in Ireland, that is my go-to source for what's new and what's happening and what are people saying. And over time, I managed to meet and happily befriend Paul O'Connella. If you go to, well, let's see, where can I send you that's easiest? Go to sabrams.com, click on Travel TV in the navigation bar, and I'm going to say just maybe it was episode 11 or something like that. Amazing attractions. We start out in the U.S., but somehow for me, all roads lead to Ireland. So the show ends up in Ireland from a connection of Amy Banks, a darling and growing into a woman rapidly, teenager, with an amazing operatic soprano voice, who my husband and I sponsored bringing over her mother with her, and she performed at the Norman Rockwell Museum, and we included the Rockwell Museum in Berkshire County in Western Massachusetts in the Amazing Attractions episode of Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams, and which, by the way, is now in its second year. We celebrated last Sunday, and we are now officially in Season 2 of Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams. So here we had the Irish connection at the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. So with that in mind, we segued into a visit in Ireland at the Beacon Hotel in Sandyford in County Dublin, which turned out to be a very convenient place on his way home for Paul O'Connella to stop by. And that was actually the first time we ever met face-to-face because we've always talked by telephone or email. And do you remember how we met? Because now it's fuzzy in my mind. I think I once knew. Maybe I knew when I interviewed you at the Beacon, but I don't remember now.
It seems that we go back a long time already, but it's always lovely to speak to you. How are you doing, Stephanie?
Well, I have to tell you, producing 2 3-hour travel radio shows and for the last year, a one-hour TV show, which is so much more time-intensive, labor-intensive, all around more intensive than 1 hour of TV, than 6 hours of radio that we do weekly. It's madness. But, you know, we create our own craziness, so I can't blame anybody. But me, maybe. But we're doing grand, and I'm really enjoying all of it because my paths lead me to people like you, Paul.
Yeah. So what are things like in the world of travel for you? How are you guys seeing Ireland at the moment? Lots going on over here.
Oh, my gosh. I have some really major concerns, frankly. The business about the potential for a hard border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland scares the stuffings out of me. I hate the idea. I'm sure people that I have spoken with in the last year or two in Ireland, neither the folks that I know in the North or the Republic are happy about the idea. I think it's terrible for tourism. I think it's terrible for just, you know, there are so many people that live in the borders region that are, you know, they just, you know, it's like the people that live in upstate New York or somewhere in Minnesota or someplace where, you know, you just get in your car and you drive 2 minutes and you're in Canada. It's the same in Ireland. You have people in County Monaghan and Donegal and Sligo and other counties that abut the Republic of Ireland border, that suddenly, you know, they'll go there to their favorite bakery is on the other side of the border, whether they're going, well, you know, the grass is greener concept. So you have people that, you know, whatever side of the border they're on, they have reasons to want to go to the other side and to make it cumbersome or to impose, you know, delays, restrictions, taxes, who knows what. And it's crazy because underneath it all, as an American on the who is not an Irish American, looking in from the outside, it's one more, forgive me, British devastating blow to an island of people who have a shared history, who, like India, Pakistan, like Palestine, Israel, like South Africa, like everywhere the British have gone, where they divide the people, turn them against each other so that, you know, they shoot at each other instead of shooting at the Brits. And all over the world, I mean, this is the pattern, divide and conquer. And it's tragic because, you know, it's like the American Civil War. These are brothers and sisters of centuries tracing themselves back to Patrick. Who, you know, I mean, it breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart.
Well, it's certainly a long and a storied history, and one it has in recent years a good news story, as you'll know, Stephanie, because since the Good Friday Agreement or the Belfast Agreement, the relationships between North and South and Britain indeed have improved dramatically, and one of the main ways that we see that as people living on the ground here. I'm speaking to you from Dublin, but when we travel to Belfast, when we travel to the counties in Northern Ireland, there is, for all intents and purposes, no real border at the moment.
No, and there hasn't been for the longest time.
Yes, you cross into another jurisdiction, you see the road signs change colour and the road names change, but other than that, the freedom of movement is absolute, and your listeners may remember if they visited a generation ago, that was very different. We had security checks, we had customs regulations for passing between the two, and so that is why we are worried about Brexit. Now, Brexit, as your listeners will also know, refers to Britain exiting from the EU, which it voted to do 2 years ago, but that's all coming to the boil at the moment because the exit date is the 29th of March. And as I speak, we're only a matter of weeks away, but a deal hasn't been agreed as to how it's going to happen between Britain and the EU. Now, that is chaotic in itself, but for us here on the ground in Ireland, you're absolutely right. The main worry is that if Britain leaves without tying up all these loose ends and without everything's sort of the I's dotted and the T's crossed, we'll be left with a return to
1970.
A hard border situation.
Right. But we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back because this is such an important issue for us to be talking about, especially as it relates to travelers. Don't leave me, people. This is Stephanie Abrams talking with Paul O'Caniela, live from Dublin.
When Jeremy Lanigan bought the dough, wait till he hadn't a shilling. His father died, he met him a mannequin, left him a farm and 10 acres and grill.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
Online with me, live from Dublin, Ireland, is my good friend Paul O'Caniela, who, as he speaks, just reminds me, A, how much I miss talking with him, and B, how much I miss not being in Ireland, but maybe we'll fix that soon. Paul is travel editor with the Irish Independent, which is like the USA Today of Ireland. You know, I have one of the things I have to do every morning on my way to breakfast, no matter what hotel, lodging, castle, manor house I'm staying in, I've got to seek out where's the Irish Independent and take it with me to breakfast to catch up. So we were talking about, you know, things going on in Ireland and how concerning are they. You mentioned, Paul, the late 1960s, early 1970s, when what was going on between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland was referred to as the Troubles.
Yeah, and we have very thankfully, as you know, you're a great supporter of tourism and travel in Ireland, Stephanie. As you know, we had moved past that, and a generation growing up today, my daughter is 12 years old and my son is 8, and they, thank God, don't know what the Troubles are other than in the history books, and they've never had to experience security checks like that. Now, nobody's suggesting that we're returning to any kind of violence or anything like that, but the prospect of a hard border between Northern Ireland and Ireland is worrying for a lot of reasons. So first of all, as you very rightly pointed out, there is the ease of travel between one place and the other. But we're also worried that it will stop Northern Irish tourists traveling to places like Donegal, to Dublin, to Monaghan, to Cavan and the border counties, that Brexit will impact the exchange rate and make it more expensive for British visitors to come to Ireland. And as you know, today British visitors are 35% of all visitors to Ireland. So they're quite an important percentage of our total tourist market. So for all those reasons, we would love to see this sorted out with certainty soon and have, at the very worst, a soft border that people can cross very easily.
Well, you know, two things come to mind. First, I don't know. I guess I got on the email list of the Belfast Telegraph, the local newspaper there in Northern Ireland, after I was a guest on a BBC Ulster BBC One radio show with a show host. Do you know Alan Simpson? Do you know the name?
The name is familiar. Yeah.
I don't know if he still has a show. I mean, this is a guy you meet him for 3 seconds and you just love him and you want him to be part of your family forever. And there's actually a snippet in my TV show that we managed to include. I think it's episode 9 of Titanic Proportions on Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams. Go find it. But we start out at the Belfast Titanic exhibit. I hate to call it a museum, but it's an experience. I don't know. really how to describe it. I mean, it's a happening. And while I was there, they tracked me down from Ulster BBC One and sorted it out and asked if I'd come over to do an interview with Alan Simpson and talk about, you know, why I talk about Ireland and spend time, you know, probably in a disproportionate amount of my travel time is spent in Ireland. And sure. There are a lot of good reasons for that. And I went over and I met him. And so, you know, and the guy is hilarious. But I think it was because of that. Ulster BBC One issued a press release that was picked up by the Belfast Telegraph. And in the process of sorting out, following up with me, I wound up on their email list. So mm-hmm. I get daily an email from the Belfast Telegraph. And about a week to 10 days ago, there was a car bombing in Derry. And there hasn't been anything like that since the early 1970s. And, you know, you don't know whether it's some, you know, young hooligan. You know, we got those kids, too. You know, they just want a good reason to cut loose and act like fools. And I need, but given the concerns of the moment about what Brexit might do in terms of borders, there was a period not long ago where Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the UK, was promising that the border would be somewhere in the Irish Sea between the UK and Ireland, so it would not have an effect on the landmass that is Ireland. And
that's right.
Nobody
talks about that
anymore.
No, every week it seems, as you read the papers and you read those newsletters, that there's a different negotiating angle or there's a quibble over a different thing. You'll have heard this phrase, the backstop, used, and that was an arrangement where we, even if Britain does or did exit from the EU, that they would keep the free border where there aren't customs and security inspections in place. And the backstop keeps coming up for debate, and we don't know what it would mean if there would be a hard border.
But there are
Europeans.
We don't
know where the lines would be drawn. You know, that's 500 kilometres of a border you're talking about, and very porous border, as you'll know probably from travelling those country roads.
Right, of course.
So in while all of this has been going on, and it has been going on for months, business leaders in all sorts of industries are sitting drumming their fingers going, what are we doing here? How are we going to prepare? Are they in? Are they out? How does it affect us? Faulty Ireland, which is our National Tourism Development Authority, has got to get Brexit ready program going where it's helping businesses to prepare for business after Brexit and how it might affect them. Businesses are looking at how it might impact their British visitors. Will they decline? Will they stop coming? Will it be harder for them to travel? Airlines are looking at where they're registered and how they can fly across. You know, if Britain isn't part of the EU, what do they have to do?
Oh, wow.
What about people who have booked flights after March 29th? A lot of it is just, we just simply don't know. And we need those reassurances, which is why, I suppose, the regular customer and consumer and reader like you and I are flummoxed that it's gotten this far. But B, every time you open a newspaper, there's more on Brexit and your eyes just glaze over. It's just so hard to take that it's going on. You know, that's just from a human level as opposed to a business level.
Well, hang on just a second. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come back. Continue talking about this very important subject with Paul O'Kaneela, travel editor with the Irish Independent, the national newspaper of my preference when I'm traveling in Ireland. And we'll be right back. Don't leave me.
We send the big show of cards, invitations for all the nice boys and girls that I'd ask. In less than a minute, the friends and relations are dancing as merry as bees with a cast. Our lashes are punch and wine, but the ladies' potatoes, cakes, and was begging and table. There were the Nolans and Dolans, okay, these cotton the girls and dancing away. They were doing all kinds of nonsensical polkas round the room in a whirly gig.
Would you be a
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
I am so delighted to have on the phone my good friend Paul O'Connella. And you know, I say all the time, I wish you could sit in with us, although it's very important you pay close attention to the commercial messages in the breaks. But I wish you could hear what goes on in the conversation in the meantime, because it's always scintillating. One of these days, we'll do webcam, live stream, something, and boy, you'll hear some stuff. But you know, Paul, I said as we went into the commercial break and we were off the air that when we came back, I wanted to share with you my first experience going from the Republic of Ireland into Northern Ireland on our very first trip to Ireland, which was in 1970. And The reason that we were in Ireland is that we were going to fly to Spain, and the Basque separatists were acting up, and they thought the best way to get the government's attention was to do things that would have a negative impact on tourism. So they were rolling hand grenades through pubs and restaurants and places where tourists would congregate. And that happened in like May of that year. And we were flying in August. And I decided that it's going to dissuade me from going. So I was not in the travel industry at the time. And I spoke with our travel agent and I said, listen, is there some place we can move the money we've paid for this trip without a cancellation penalty? Maybe within the same tour operator and just move it to another destination they serve and we'll go somewhere else. And it came back to me and said, the only place I can get you into is the UK and Ireland. And I said, works for me. And that's how we wound up in Ireland on that trip. And we were there. We flew into London, got a car, drove around, drove to the west coast of England, hopped a ferry. We were headed for Wales, actually, but some kids were flushing out birds that they were shooting, and they set a fire to flush the birds out of the tall weeds in Wales, in Holyhead, and they burned down the bridge that takes you from Holyhead to where the ferry would leave for Ireland. So we got there and found that out and had to drive up to Liverpool and take the ferry from Liverpool to Dublin. And then we drove around the Republic for a bit, and then we just made a U-turn and headed north. And we got to Belfast. And we got off a motorway. And when you got off the motorway, the exit ramp went straight up like a San Francisco hill. And as we approached the top of the motorway, there was a lemonade stand. And I thought, isn't that odd? That's a funny looking lemonade stand. It was constructed out of sandbags. And as we got to the top of the ramp, you had to go left and you were actually on the overpass of the highway we just got off of. And as we were get to the top, a guy stands up from behind this lemonade stand. And he's wearing a beret and khaki color clothing. And he's got bullets from his right shoulder to his left hip. And he's got a gun, a rifle. And I thought, oh, they must be making a movie. And we make the left turn across the overpass, and left and right on the little sidewalks on this overpass over the highway, leaning against the guardrails so you don't go flying off the overpass if you're a pedestrian, there are big coils, I mean like 36-inch wide, round coils of rusted barbed wire tied together at various points around this barbed wire circle with little, they look like twisty ties, like you put on a loaf of bread, made out of more rusted barbed wire. And they're every 4 to 6 feet on both sides of this overpass. And I thought, well, it props for the movie. And now we park the car. And in the car park, which we would call a parking lot, it has a fence around it, and the tops of the fences, the tops of the rooftops, the tops of the buildings are all covered in wrapped with barbed wire. And then as you walk into town, there into where the business section is, there's more barbed wire every 4 to 6 feet. And they had just started shipping those fisherman knit Aran handmade sweaters, pullovers as you'd call them, and cardigans from Ireland to the U.S. They'd just become fashionable a few years earlier. And I promised people who wanted them that I would bring some home. We passed a store that had a beautiful display of these sweaters. And I said, okay, well, we'll get some of those before we leave Belfast. As we're walking along, here comes walking at me and my husband, three rows, columns of soldiers. And their rifles are perched, leaning against their left shoulder, or maybe the right shoulder. Don't remember to tell you the truth. But they had bayonets on theirs. And I thought, oh, you know, where are the cameras? And where are the lighting people? Where are the sound people? Where's the big truck with, you know, all the equipment where the cinematographers and the director hangs out? Didn't see any of that. And then as we walked down the street, we came to the Belfast bus station. And the gates, there were these big gates like you have at the zoo or somebody's palace, you know, the big gates. And they were locked. And left and right on the column that was made of stone, there were blackboards. And painted on the blackboard were things like, you know, bus leaving from Belfast for this place, Belfast to Coleraine, Belfast to wherever, Bushmills. And it would tell you what time the bus was leaving. But on the arrival sign, there was nothing arriving. And you look through the gates and there were no buses. But there were camouflaged Jeeps and trucks. And I'm still thinking movie. They're making a movie.
Yeah.
I had no idea. We're in a war zone. And the tourism board for Belfast was set up in what we would call as a construction shack. It looks like what you'd call a caravan. It looks like, I don't know, like a mobile home almost, set up on blocks and a portable wooden stairway to enter. And you went inside and there was a very charming young lady there, a million brochures. And I said, you know, I'd like to go somewhere else because I don't know, this doesn't look appealing to me. And she said, oh, you have to go to Giant's Causeway and you have to go to, she gave us a whole big long list and she gave us maps and charts and graphs and paperwork and we get all done. And I said, how long has it been like this? Because now it's already dawned on me, something not so good is going on here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She said, been like what? And I said, the soldiers, the barbed wire, the guns. And she said, oh, we live with that. You just get used to it. And it's been quiet for a long time. And that was in mid-May, 1970. And we got home about 2.5 weeks later. And all hell broke loose about 3 weeks after that point when we were in Belfast. Subsequent to that, I have had the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing John Hume in Derry. If you go to sabrams.com, sabrams.com, put John Hume, H-U-M-E, into the search box. You'll get links to the archived audio. Twice I interviewed him face-to-face in Derry and once by telephone from my studio. And actually had him on to explain to Americans what it was that Hillary and Bill Clinton did for peace in Ireland. Because when somebody was running, it must have been Hillary. There were people saying, well, what did she do? And they didn't know and understand. So I got John Hume on to explain the role of the Clintons in peace in Ireland. And John was one of he shared the Nobel Peace Prize 1998 with the other party in power at the time. David, what's his name? What is his name?
Trimble.
Trimble.
Yeah.
David Trimble. And they shared the prize. But that was, you know, you talk about I mean, when I tell people I was in Belfast in the spring of 1970, they look at me like, you know, what could you have been thinking, girl? We didn't know. We don't get that kind of news here. If you're not in the Irish community finding out what's going on at home, you don't really know what's going on. We have to take a break. We'll be right back. Don't leave me.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
There's always wonderful things going on in Ireland, and you really need to check and see events, happenings, festivals, wonderful places to stay, fabulous places to eat. And that's something you wouldn't have said on my first visit to Ireland in 1970. You really needed a guidebook to tell you where to get a good meal. But there has been a culinary explosion in Ireland, which probably began somewhere around 1995 to 1998, somewhere in there. So it's 20 years or more where if you're still hearing people say, oh, the food in Ireland is dreadful, it means they are basing that opinion on their great aunt who went in 1960-something, or a visit they made in the 1980s, or some old wives' tale that was told to them by somebody who told it to somebody who told it to somebody. But it's not current, it's not new, and like traveling in France, it's pretty hard to walk in anywhere in Ireland and not get a great meal. That's how phenomenally the pendulum has swung. I have on the air with me Paul O'Connell, a travel editor for the Irish Independent, a fabulous newspaper that I love to read when I'm in Ireland. And I understand that you've just come through announcing your Reader Travel Awards. How many awards were they and what were they for?
Yeah, so every year we ask our readers to vote on their favorite travel experiences, mostly in Ireland. We have 15 awards, but 10 of them are in Ireland. They voted in their thousands, and we crunched the numbers, and we got the results. And they range from stuff like Ireland's favorite home holiday destination, which is, do you want to hazard a guess? The winner of that one was Kerry this year.
Let me tell you why Kerry won. You want to know why Kerry won?
Go on, tell me.
Like the Kerry soccer team and footballers, they have a very well-oiled machine in Kerry. And if this was based on people voting, these guys got out the troops.
They will have got the troops out. We had a panel of judges as well, but we all agreed that, exactly to your point, Kerry has been welcoming visitors since Queen Victoria's time and beyond. But the thing is, they continue to lead the way. They continue to open new attractions. The Killarney House in Killarney National Park is opening up this year. There's new hotels opening. There's always improvements. The food scene is on the up. We had a guest house, a 10-room guest house in Dingle called Castlewood House that readers said provided the best Irish welcome. So we thought that, yes, Kerry's been around, but it continues to improve.
But did they say, but did any of them stay at the Greenmount House, which I'll bet gives them a run for their money at Castlewood?
Well, I'm going to put that on my list.
By the way, I don't disagree with your readers, and that's the reason that the second episode of Travel TV with Stephanie Abrams is called Captivating Kerry. And it's all about the Dingle Peninsula and Killarney, and you will see shots at the waterfalls of me talking with my audience in front of the waterfalls in Kerry, in the Killarney National Park.
Yeah, that's probably Tork Waterfall, which
is absolutely stunning. Yes, it is.
You know, there was surprises in the answers too. We asked our readers for their favorite adventure in Ireland, and they said it was the Waterford Greenway. And the Waterford Greenway is a new off-road cycling trail that goes from Waterford City to Dungarvan in the south, the very south of Ireland. And it's 42 kilometers long, and it only opened less than 2 years ago, and already they're getting nearly 250,000 visitors a year.
Wow.
But what I like about it is lots of them are locals, and lots of them are Irish people who are just proud to get out and to support it. And since it's open, there are little cafes popping up along the way, little bike hire enterprises. So it's a good example of a local initiative that's bringing local businesses and communities along.
Do you have, like, who plays second, third, fourth, and whatever?
Or yes, I do. We did that in a lot of the categories, actually. In the adventures, we had second place was a cliff walk in County Wicklow between Bray and Greystones. I don't know if you've done that, but it might be one to pop down for your next visit.
If they're looking in the area around Cork and West Cork, did the Fota Island Wildlife Preserve score
it
at all?
It didn't make the top 10, but it got very highly rated by a lot of people.
Yeah, we see their problem
very
is they
popular.
They don't have a good machine out there. When Catherine Webster was the executive director of the Cliff Samoa, and they went in for some contest where people needed to vote, you can't believe the emails that went out to people telling them go vote and that you can vote.
That
up
was
to
the seven natural wonders of the world,
right,
or something.
It was
like a modern
right.
take on it.
That's exactly right. Right.
Yeah. We also had, I was conscious, I know a lot of Ireland's five-star hotels get a lot of press in the US, but there are a lot of great small stays and B&Bs in Ireland that are also worth a look, as you know.
Yes.
And we have a category called Best Small Stay, and the winner was a campsite and a glamping site called Hidden Valley in County Wicklow, right in the middle of the Wicklow Mountains. It's run by a couple, a small family, and Irish people that go there go back year in and year out, and each year they add on incremental little improvements like kayaks that go on the lake and cinema nights and, you know, outdoor barbecues and stuff like that. So
I think it was
really nice to see one of those crop up.
Can I get you to email me that list?
Yeah.
So when we're...
I can, of course.
Yeah, when we come
and
to
for your
end...
listeners, they can go to independent.ie/travel awards, and that's where they'll find... It's a good, you know, a great read for the commute or in the evening. You can, when you're planning your next trip to Ireland... Excuse me, it's got all of these little places, the guest houses and B&Bs, as well as we asked readers to vote for the number one hotel, and that was one that you will know well. It was the Shelburne in Dublin.
Number 27, St. Stephen's Green. That's the address. I'm telling you, go look it up. Number 27, St. Stephen's Green. It's a half a block from Grafton Street and all the shopping. It's in a great location.
Yeah, can I add you to its list of famous guests? Have you stayed?
I don't remember.
You know,
I don't think we stayed there. I mean, I've been there for tea and lunch and that kind of thing.
Oh,
but I have to share a little thing with you. If I were picking the best hotel in Ireland, that wouldn't be it.
What would you choose?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, there's so many way at the top of the list. Oh, my gosh. Probably Kilronan Castle. In County Roscommon.
Yeah.
You know, there are that lesser known, less paid attention to, well known among the circles of people who frequent, but among the, that's why I've got to finish 1,001 Reasons to Visit Ireland. We got more to come. Don't go away. Flying high.